But the key is to connect with the anarchist inside them, because everybody has one. Everyone is by default an anarchist. And on top of that, they have their authoritarian indoctrination. And the thing is to sneak underneath and show them that the conflict is not you versus them. The conflict is their underlying decent, you know, conscience and moral code against their authoritarian indoctrination is getting in the way of it.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome, friends. James Corbett here at CorbettReport.com, April 18th, 2017. And for no particular reason, I am losing my voice today, but it's all right. It's not like I talk for a living or anything. Well, you'll have to stomach my increasingly fading voice throughout this conversation, but luckily I'm only one half of the conversation, and maybe even less than that, because we have a stellar guest lined up for you today. But before we get into the conversation itself, I should start with a little preamble. I just want to let my statist brothers and sisters in the audience, who I love dearly as human beings, although I could not disagree more strongly with their support of a violent initiation of violence as the way to organize our society. But if you are a statist who is watching this channel for some reason, this conversation is not for you. This conversation is for my anarchist brothers and sisters out there who are probably sick of banging their head against the brick wall known as their statist friends, trying to get them to understand a thing or two about how it can possibly be that we can imagine that society can survive without the monopolization of the initiation of violence by a gang of thugs. So, in order to bring us to that understanding of how better to communicate with our statist brethren, we have none other than Larkin Rose on the program today, who I'm sure will be familiar to my audience, but if not, please go to LarkinRose.com and please familiarize yourself with his books, for example, The Iron Web and The Most Dangerous Superstition. And of course, he has his YouTube channel and his Facebook, and he's on Steemit. He's all over the place, so I'm sure if you haven't seen him yet, you will in the future. Larkin Rose, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on again.
All right. So, I have you on today for a specific reason, namely, for people who haven't seen your video about Candles in the Dark, you are starting a new speaking tour in which you're going to be instructing your fellow anarchists about how to speak to statists. Tell us about this idea, where it came from, and what you're up to.
Right. This is basically a two-day event. The first one's happening in Phoenix, Arizona on May 6th and 7th, so it's coming up quick. And then May 13th and 14th, it's happening in Redlands, California. It's always a two-day event happening on a weekend. It's now, having been an anarchist for 20 years now, a little bit over 20 actually, I've accidentally learned a whole lot about human psychology, more so than just the philosophy. And when I watch the average anarchist talking to the average statist, whether it's in person or online, it's like they're speaking a different language. And, you know, every anarchist I know knows what I'm talking about, where you explain something that's basic and simple. Something, as one example, saying like, we can't delegate rights we don't have. So how did people in government get the right to do anything I don't have the right to do? I mean, it's a very basic concept. It's so basic as to be self-evident. But I know for myself and just about all the anarchists I know, you explain that to a statist, and their brain goes in all these weird directions that have nothing to do with what you just said. Well, but what about the roads? Or, you know, if you don't like it, oh, you want every man for himself. Oh, you just want violence. Oh, you don't. All these things that are completely disjointed and unrelated to a very simple explanation. And the trouble is not that anarchists don't know the philosophy and don't know how to explain it. And I love the fact that there are, you know, videos and books and stuff all over the place. You know, your channel and my books and everything under the sun, explaining the philosophy. The trouble is it never gets through to more than a handful of people because you literally have to address them as if you're doing occult deprogramming, because you literally are. They were trained to believe in a mythical deity called government and believe it has the right to rule. And so to those of us who already understand these things, and I'm embarrassed by how long it took me to outgrow my statism and let go of the last vestiges of authoritarianism. It took me ages. I mean, it happened 20 years ago, but it still took me ages to get to that point. And it's once you're here, the truth seems so patently obvious that I know for myself and most of the anarchists I talk to, it's like, how, why did I ever not know this? It's like not knowing that 2 + 2 = 4. It's so obvious. And if we turn around and explain it, you know, now that we understand it and we explain it in obvious terms and other people go, what about the roads? It's easy to think people are just too stupid or emotional or something. It's hopeless. I give up. And the thing is, I've accidentally learned over the last 20 years ways to basically, you know, tiptoe through the minefield of the human psyche on a one-on-one basis. I'm not talking about what I do in public and debates and stuff where it's always argumentative and it's short and it's impersonal. I'm talking about the anarchist talking to their status friends and family, people they actually care about, people that it matters that, you know, you wake up day to day, you know, day after day, and the people you know and spend your life with are advocating the enslavement of mankind. And that's kind of frustrating. And it would be nice to be able to make them see that that's wrong. And there are approaches that work. And it is very much like occult deprogramming in that you can't just bludgeon them over the head with a punchline, because then they freak out and go, oh, every man for himself, I'm going to run away. But there are ways to sort of delicately tiptoe past all the things that set people off to get them to actually think about things. And Candles in the Dark is made to train anarchists and voluntarists on a one-on-one basis, not making videos or writing books, but how to actually talk to statists that you know and care about and get them to hear you. Because I'm pretty sure almost all of us feel like, you know, 99% of the time you're talking to a statist, they don't even hear what you said. It doesn't matter how clearly you say it. It doesn't matter how obvious the concept seemed to you, how simple the logic is. They all the way don't hear it. And there are ways to get them to hear it. But they're not intuitive. Like, you have to make an effort to watch what you're doing and the way you talk and the way you approach it. Because the simplest little things can make them shut down and go into combat mode, and they put up the wall, and then it you might as well all the way be speaking a different language, because their responses are completely unrelated to what you're saying or what you're asking.
Well, let's pick up on that point, because I think that's such an important one. You've mentioned it a couple of times now, and it's something that occurs to me immediately. It's not just like you're speaking a different language. I think really, statism is a different language from the language of anarchism. And we talk about this explicitly in a number of contexts, like, for example, taxation is theft. Taxation is theft is a phrase that is, it's become a meme, thankfully, and it gets people to think, because it is a redefinition of a word that has been so normalized that, okay, taxation, yes, blah, 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 blah. We have all these associations with the word and what it means and what it's about. Taxation is theft is a redefinition that gets people to see it in a different way. Not everyone all the time, but at any rate, it's, you know, it gets people to think and talk and at least debate what this is about and why, you know, well, no, it's not theft because blah, blah, blah. So I think it does come back down to language so much. So much of it is based on our definitions of things. I guess is the point of this then to try to, yeah, I don't know, rewrite the dictionary for people that they've been programmed with since their childhood?
That's definitely a part of it. One of the first steps is for the voluntarist to understand the sort of cloudy void in the statist head. And for me, all I have to do is look back to when I was a statist, and the concept of law or taxation was just this vague, mushy thing. I hadn't thought it out. It had certain connotations and implications that were taken on faith, but like, that's a perfect example of saying taxation is theft. And most people go, no, it isn't. But they have no idea why they think it isn't. And they can't even define what the difference is. If you ask the average statist, what is the law? What does that even mean? And well, it's like the way we – and you can see their entire lives, they've said the word, they've heard the word, and they don't know what it is. Well, it's sort of – they write down it's the rules you have to live by to – like, yeah, the 100,000 pages that nobody's ever read, that's how you have to live to be a decent human being. Now, right now I'm being in an argumentative mode, which is not the way to actually do it. But yeah, it's very much about getting into their heads and having it not be about, here's my ideas, I'm going to hit you over the head with my ideas until you agree, because usually that doesn't work. There are some people who like to think and like to debate, and that approach actually works. But the key is to connect with the anarchist inside them, because everybody has one. Everyone is by default an anarchist, and on top of that, they have their authoritarian indoctrination. And the thing is to sneak underneath and show them that the conflict is not you versus them. The conflict is their underlying decent, you know, conscience and moral code against their authoritarian indoctrination is getting in the way of it. So, and if that becomes the conversation and you're not against them, it's like, I'm on the side of the real you. And then you use questions to draw out the real them and get them to see that what they really want, like, who cares what I really want? What the statist really wants is incompatible with what they have been taught. And so when they see, if you can gently lead them to that contradiction, then screaming at me and running away, first of all, they're way less likely to do it. Second of all, it doesn't do them any good. They took the contradiction with them because it's in their head. But that sort of gentle, passive way of just using questions to get them to look at, like, the terminology and the concepts that they've never thought about. And they just sort of think, well, law-abiding taxpayer, that's good, right? That's how you be a good person. And they've never thought about any of those words. So they have this vague feeling that, well, that equals good. And there are ways to gently get them to see that they don't even believe that that equals good. And when it gets to the point where they have conflicting ideas, then they have to decide what to do about it. But then it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be argumentative and defensive and all that. But even down to the details of the wording, and in Candles of the Dark, I actually give a bunch of specific lines of questioning and discussion you can use to gently get there. Like, I love the fact that there's a meme of taxation is theft. I wouldn't start a conversation with that, because it's sort of bashing headlong and making it immediately a conflict with them. Again, for people who like to debate, that's fine. And I love to debate in public, and that's a different thing. Mostly when I debate, it's for the sake of the spectators, not whoever, not the stagist I'm debating. But when you're talking one-on-one to somebody you care about, gently going in and connecting with the real them, and then showing that the real them is at, you know, diametrically opposed to their own statism. And it's possible, and it's difficult, and it takes, you know, it takes practice, and it takes very specific methods that I teach in Candles in the Dark, but it can be done, and it can be done a lot more efficiently and effectively than most anarchists do it.
Well, I am fully on board with the idea of this, and I hope it creates a cadre of people who can go out and effectively convert people to anarchism or reality, perhaps. But let me push back in a couple of different ways. First of all, the idea, I mean, I'd love to believe that everyone is anarchist and they have this indoctrination put on top of that, but I'm not sure that I can. Because, for example, I was just recently watching one of your old talks that you gave, Liberty on the Rocks or something, a number of years ago, where you said something along the lines of, you know, we all know when people get into this and they become anarchists, they don't go back. There's no going back to statism once you've come into this. And that's something I would have wholeheartedly agreed with you on a few years ago. But now, having watched the phenomenon of all of these people who claimed, oh, I used to be a libertarian, I used to be a voluntarist, I used to be an anarchist, but now, you know, let's get on board with the next political messiah because he's going to close down the borders and make America great again or whatever. I've seen so many people going back into statism land, or was that, I mean, were they really ever anarchists in the first place, I guess is the real question.
Yeah, well, I think some of them totally weren't. And I see a lot of people who say, well, I used to be a libertarian. And I say, well, when? Like, you don't even seem to understand the principles now. I do think some, you know, the whole thing of fear is the mind killer. They get scared enough and then they run off to whatever violent savior promises to save them. I think there's actually a fundamental difference between people who became anarchists by way of practical reasons, thinking, well, this will probably work better. And then if they get scared of something, it's like, well, never mind, I wanted to do this instead. Instead of understanding the underlying principles of why there can't be such thing as a legitimate political authority. It's like nobody goes back to saying, well, now we need Santa Claus to do Christmas because I'm not sure all the good kids will get. Like, if you all the way understand that Santa Claus isn't real, you don't go back. If you just thought, I think we can do a better job than Santa, then you can be scared into going, no, we better let Santa do it. So I think there's sort of two categories of anarchists, and you can't always tell the difference, because if they're out there advocating a stateless society, you don't know whether it's actually from principle and understanding that government's always bogus, or if it's just for practical reasons and at the drop of a hat, they'll turn around and become a fascist or something. Incidentally, I think the number of people who did that, you know, with Trump in particular, is a lot lower than it seems, because the number of people who do that are very loud about it. And the number of people who didn't do that, who are still consistent voluntarists, are less loud. And that's one of the reasons why the approach I teach in Candles in the Dark isn't about practicalities. And it's not about, well, this would probably work better than that. And it's not about predictions and you know, all the things that are just sort of debatable and arguable. Well, I think this would work better. I think that would work better. It's getting people to see that if you are advocating state violence in a situation where you wouldn't feel okay using violence yourself, you have a conflict inside your own head. And you can't say it that bluntly, or they can't process it and they can't even hear you. But to slowly get them to see that, so that they never feel comfortable again asking government to do anything they wouldn't do. Now, if they're so psychotic they would run off and shoot Muslims at random, then they might ask a ruling class to do that too. Most people aren't that psychotic. And I would settle for a world where we're just down to the psychotic people doing psychotic things instead of the normal people voting for other psychos to do psychotic things. But I think there's a fundamental understanding of self-ownership that even a bunch of anarchists don't have if they got there by way of thinking, well, this will probably work better than that. And that's not deep enough. You know, that if that's as far as they got, they can be scared back. And some of them have been scared back into cheering for a ruling class. But if you really get the underlying thing, it really is as ridiculous. Like, I am incapable of ever believing government is legitimate again, just like I'm not going to suddenly believe Santa is real again. Right. And people who all the way get to that point don't go back. Yeah. And they're the ones who can spread it to others.
Yeah, that is a good point. I'll start believing in Santa because only he can deliver the presents. Yeah, no, it's a good point. So I guess the other question I have about this process is that my understanding, and I'm in the 10th year now. This is the decade mark of the Corbett Report. So I've been doing this work for a long time, and it's not always been centered around anarchism per se. It's still not necessarily centered around it, but at any rate, that's a part of my message. But so many of the things that I talk about are things that people are obviously resistant to at first. And so I see the types of cognitive dissonance that information can produce in people, information they don't want to hear. And probably haven't looked into and have all their defenses erected against it. And in my years of doing this and observing people coming face to face with these types of problems and information, it seems to me that everyone has their own way of internalizing and dealing with and overcoming cognitive biases and dissonance and things like that. And it always comes back to when a person finally confronts their contradictions in their head and finally realizes and recognizes them for contradictions and wrestles them down to the ground and realizes, okay, I've been living, you know, this false consciousness, so I have to accept this. I've seen that process in a lot of different people over the years. I'm not sure I'm convinced there is a one-size-fits-all approach to this, to the way that this can be done with people. I think there are people who do, for example, respond to the in-your-face, taxation is theft, let's debate it out, you know, get in your face with that type of thing, and then other people are completely turned off by it. So my reasoning has always been, well, I can only be who I am, and I can only articulate things in the way that I can, and if someone else doesn't respond to that, I mean, the chips have to fall where they may, I can't be responsible for what's going on in their head. What's your take on that from this position of what you're doing with Candles in the Dark?
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, I totally agree with all that. I love the fact that there are people who do it differently. Like, I do the argumentative debate thing in public, which it's funny because it's the exact opposite of what I teach in Candles in the Dark. And nobody's seen me do that because I intentionally don't use that method in public. Because one thing is, don't have an audience there to put them on the spot and make them feel defensive. So automatically, people haven't seen me do it because I don't do it in front of people. But I love the fact that, people do it in different, you know, whether they're doing it gently with the whole nonviolent communication or they do a direct debate like I like to do. And so I think there are a bunch of approaches. And the key to Candles in the Dark is not here's the formula, memorize it, deliver it. It's actually to get inside the head of the statist you're talking to and find what makes them believe and want what they want. And get more clear about what they believe than they are, and then help lead them to the contradiction. And the thing is, you know, another main focus is know what your own goals are when you're talking to the statist. If your goal is, I'm going to sit down and in 10 minutes they're going to say, I'm now totally an anarchist, you're going to be disappointed every single time. All you can do is lead them to their own contradictions. They have to decide what to do about it. And so there are indications that you got them there. And that's the time to not beat them over the head and not make an argument. When they show clearly that they see a contradiction, if they want to keep talking with you, let them. But don't go, ha ha, I win. Like, that's going to make them back off and freak out. But if you can get them to see it, then it's, you know, the ball is in their court and you can't force them to do anything. You can just get them to see it and go, okay, you saw A, you saw B, they're both inside your own head. You know they don't match, so I'm done. You know, if you want more from me, that's fine. But that's the key. And that's a personal thing when you're talking to a statist. Because, I mean, just to break it into two general categories, of course, then there's every single individual category. But the political left and the political right are statism under very different excuses most of the time. And so the approach is different of like, here is I obviously don't say it to them this way. Here are the bad ideas you advocate, and here are the good motives underneath that. And they're very different from the bad ideas that the other party advocates from their very different set of good motives. So you have to link in and connect with the good motives and then show them that actually, whatever they are, like, it's pointless to try to throw your moral code into them and your preferences and values into them. Like, sit there until you care about what I care about. Find what they care about. And use that to show them that what they are doing is in conflict with themselves. And it doesn't, like, if there's a former, like, I was right-wing statist, you know, I was Republican-leaning. If I'm talking to a left-leaning statist, I don't need to bludgeon them over the head to change them to my values first. I can just connect to their values. It doesn't even matter if I think their preferences or priorities are at all good. That doesn't matter. Because I can show them with whatever their priorities are, just by way of questioning, that they're in conflict with themselves. They're cheering for something that doesn't even match what they want. Never mind what I want. But who cares what I want? I'm talking to them. And so a key to it is to find what they actually want, find what they actually believe. Now, every once in a while, if you meet an actual sociopath who says, I don't care about anybody else, I just care about me, don't bother talking to them. You're not going to talk them into being a decent human. You're not going to talk them into having a conscience. So walk away. But for the vast majority of people, their good intentions plus their indoctrination is what's making them cheer for evil. And it is possible to get them to see that regardless of where they started, regardless of their priorities and all that. But you have to find and connect to the good intentions and then show them the conflict between their good intentions and the statism they were taught.
You know, it sounds to me like the principles and the ideas of communication that you're talking about in Candles in the Dark would apply not just to talking to people about anarchism.
Yeah, they apply sort of everywhere. And a lot of these principles come up in the concept of nonviolent communication. There are places where I diverge from that, knowingly and intentionally. Like, I think there really is a place, even when doing the gentle thing, of making people feel bad about what they can do. And I instruct people how to do that in a way that they don't have to get mad at you. It's not a matter of you're evil and you're cheering for evil. But if you make it personal and you make it specific and you get, you know, let's say somebody, I care for the poor, and you know, this is obviously a very abbreviated version, but I care for the poor, so I want a welfare state. If you can get them to see, you're actually threatening me with a cage if I don't hand over the money for your welfare state. And if you can get them to see that and admit that, you usually don't even have to say that's bad. If you can all the way get them to say what they advocate be done to me, which is that's a thing I even use in public, but there's a gentler way to use it that I teach in Candles in the Dark. Like, if you're uncomfortable about saying you want me caged if I don't want to give to your welfare state, it's because you know there's something wrong with that. And that's why most statists, you know, they delay and they hesitate and they dodge questions, because they don't want to come out and say, I want men with guns to make you do what I think you ought to. And, you know, the people who will always say that, I say, okay, well, you're a psycho. I'll go talk to somebody who's less of a psycho. Because most people aren't like that. Most people will hesitate and fudge it and obfuscate because they feel guilty about it. And there are ways to gently make them feel guilty about it without being, you know, condemning and attacking them. And that's how I got to be an anarchist, when I realized, well, you can't tax me for welfare, but I'm allowed to, you know, want you to be taxed for the military. And then I felt guilty about that. Like, why? They're being forced to, never mind that I think it's good for them. That's not okay. I'm cheering for them to be forced to fund something they oppose. You know, even if they're wrong, even if it is a good idea, it's not okay to threaten them. And so I guilt tripped myself. And there are ways to do that gently. And that's, you know, that's outside the realm of what nonviolent communication is supposed to be. It's, you're doing something bad. But basically, I'm going to help you notice that you're doing something bad instead of me just saying you're bad. But so I do go outside of that. But yeah, the general, you know, communication approach of connect with the person first, connect with what they really want, instead of starting out, I'm going to find a thing to disagree with and just start out with an assertion that's going to make you defensive. You know, immediately two sets of walls go up and the likelihood you're going to accomplish anything is slim to none. So yeah, a lot of this just applies to basic communication regarding anything.
All right. So you're going to be in Phoenix, Arizona, May 6th and 7th, Redlands, California, May 13th and 14th, 2-day seminars. Tell people how they can find more information about this and how people who are interested can sign up for it.
If you go to larkenrose.com, which is LARKENROSE.com, the button at the top that says store will take you to the seminars, and that embedded in there is the video I made about Candles in the Dark, which I'll tell you more, and you can get tickets there. But there's a YouTube video embedded right there, so you can learn more about it. I'm also hoping to do one in Pennsylvania, one in New Hampshire in June, and then July, probably Toronto and somewhere else. Denver in late August is pretty much a done deal. The other ones just depend on demand and scheduling. If there are enough people who want to do it, I want to keep doing it, because I think it's hugely important that the people who are already there can actually efficiently and effectively communicate it to the people who aren't. And right now, most of us are pretty bad at it most of the time, because they don't take into account the psychology. So that's what this teaches, is how to do that.
And you're coming to Western Japan in September?
2053. If there's enough of a demand, I would do it.
Oh, well. Well, what about for those of us who happen to be stuck on the other side of the planet from you and are unable to make it? Is there any way that people are going to be able to access this from afar?
Not at the moment. I do intend to record the first 2 hours and post them as two separate videos. For the moment, if somebody wants the rest, they have to find a way to actually get to the seminar. One thing we're going to do is actually bribe statists to come in and be guinea pigs for the last session, so the people there can try out the things they learned on their statist friends and family.
Oh, how I would love to see that and participate.
And that would be fun. But for obvious reasons, we don't want to film that, because we don't want the people even more on the spot than they already will be.
Of course. Well, it sounds like fun. It sounds like it'll be quite an experience. So I'm hoping that at least some Corbett Report members or audience members will be able to go and report back and let us know how it goes. But at any rate, Larkin Rose, I do appreciate all the stuff that you're doing. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing more of it in the future, including, of course, The Mirror, right?
Yep. Yep. That's still in the making.
I won't put you on the spot and make you give us a date.
I wouldn't even dare to guess it. Anyway, I will say the Candles in the Dark is basically teaching people how to do a one-on-one version of what the mirror does.
Which, come to think of it, might be even easier to convince people to do rather than sit in front of a computer screen. But anyway, I'll still continue checking periodically for the mirror. Until then, I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future. Larkin, thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you.
The Corbett Report is brought to you by you. Your support makes The Corbett Report possible. Sign up for the subscriber newsletter or purchase a DVD at corbettreport.com/support.